Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview, sponsored by 1-800-DIAL-DJs.com and recorded live on blogtalkradio.com from the new media and home shopping network, capital of the world, St. Petersburg. Have ever guessed that the art of the deal, the essence of how business gets done in America, would make compelling television? If you don't like the genre of reality business competition on TV, blame Mark Burnett, the creator of Survivor and The Apprentice. If you like these shows, give some credit to Donald Trump, who brought the force and cult of his personality to The Apprentice and made America care about the craft and sometimes underhanded nature of some business leaders. And don't forget the late Billy Mays and his partner Sully Sullivan, who starred in Pitchman. But now it's Damon John's turn. He's one of the hugely successful business leaders putting chum in ABC's Shark Tank, which airs its season finale on Tuesday, October 20th at 8 p.m. If you haven't caught the show, here's a clip from a recent episode of Shark Tank.
Hi, my name is Stacy, and I'm the creator of Stacy's Decadent Delights. Decadent Delights are flavored chocolate-covered potato chips. I'm asking for $40,000 in exchange for 30% equity in my company. I came up with this a few years ago. I was at lunch and I became so engrossed in the book that I was reading that I didn't realize my potato chips and chocolate ended up in my mouth at the same time. And I was just like, oh God, this is so good.
So you're putting the salt in with the chocolate. It's the real chip covered in chocolate.
The real chip.
That's got to taste like crap.
My motto is, if I can get your mouth, I got your butt.
You got to be careful how you use that motto because it could be used in different industries also.
I guarantee you will love these chips.
Talk is cheap. Let's eat the chips. Let's find out how bad they taste.
Let's do it. Stacey, is there any calories in these chips?
They're chocolate and potato chips.
You get all the bad.
Got it.
Go figure.
Yeah.
So, Stacey, there wasn't enough calories in just a potato chip. You got to double it down.
Don't eat.
Let's go together. Yeah. Walk us through the colors.
Yeah, what are the different colors?
The yellow is lemon. The red ones are red vanilla. The brown one is milk chocolate.
Are there actual potato chips or are they just chocolate that looks like potato chips?
They're chips. They're all chocolate-covered potato chips.
Hey, not bad.
Oh, I got in your mouth and got you, didn't I?
Stacey, hey. There's got to be 10,586,000 calories in there.
They're the best calories you ever had.
I can taste the real chip in there.
There's a real potato chip in there.
Damon John made his fortune as the entrepreneur who founded the FUBU apparel label. It just I can never say that without smiling. If you haven't worn his styling clothes, you either know someone who does or you've seen them on someone somewhere. I know what FUBAR stands for, but what does FUBU mean? FUBU. I'm going to have to ask. Now, John is also the author of a book, Display of Power, How FUBU Changed the World of Fashion, Branding, and Lifestyle. Damon, welcome to Mr. Media.
Hi, thanks for having me.
My pleasure. How's it going?
It's going well, going well. It's a little rainy, but it's well over here.
Well, congratulations on the success of Shark Tank.
Thank you. I'm having a ball.
Why, I got to ask you this, why did a successful business exec like yourself decide to appear on a TV reality show?
Well, I know it is reality, but when I think of reality, I think of those, you know, the ones where it shows your home and your house and you're doing a whole bunch of stupid things. And I've been offered those shows millions of times. I love the show because it was the business, strictly about business and the art of closing deals or not closing deals. And that's why I found the show attractive.
And what have you found works best on the show in terms of the entrepreneurs that are coming on?
Well, first of all, I find that we all have to love the entrepreneur themselves. And then it gets into a negotiation of either do they have a patent or a proprietary product, or are they generating a lot of revenue and we can see a potential of growth in the product or the brand.
Did the show change much from, you know, when you first started shooting to when you finished the season? Is this kind of thing that, you know, there was some growth in the, you know?
I think that what changed in the show was initially, if you look at, they loved the show so much that they aired the pilot. And the pilot had, we were on this big, huge desk, and it looked like a newscaster desk. And I think that, and we had money, piles of money in front of us, and people were confused. They were like, well, when do they get the money? Do you give the money right away? And the desk made it so impersonal, so cold, like a news feel. After that, they changed to a new set that we all loved. It was so much more engaging. The money wasn't on the table, so people didn't feel like, oh, why didn't the person just grab the money and leave, you know? So those are the only two things that really changed as the show progressed.
Did you change? Do you find that I don't know, maybe you were comfortable right at the beginning, or, you know, did you find it got easier, you know, being in this situation?
Well, it was a slow start in the beginning because I was used to being on shows like The Big Idea and a lot of places where people would elevate pitch me. And, you know, in the elevator pitch, somebody pitches you and you have to let them speak for 90 seconds and then you kind of critique their pitch. But this show, I had to get used to the fact that, no, I can ask a question immediately and I don't have to critique their pitch because this is really my money I'm spending. I have to ask them really invasive questions because I have to get down to, you know, why I need to invest in this person and what's in it for me. So the aspect of it being my money had changed me and made me way more aggressive in dealing with people.
And the big idea, you're referring to the Donnie Deutsch show, of course.
Yeah, correct, yeah.
This is your own money. I mean, that's what's so fascinating about this. It reminds me, there was a game show a while back, several years ago, called Win Ben Stein's Money. It's basically Win Damon John's money, right?
Yeah, exactly. Win Damon John's money and time because, you know, I'm not just going to go in there and throw money at the deal. I'm going to kind of try to help the entrepreneur and you know, win a lot more than just my money.
How many deals did you make during the show?
So far, I think I've made probably about five. I'm in with other sharks on about three of them, and two I think are by myself.
How much money have you put on the line in this?
So far on the line, I think I'm up to about maybe about $700,000.
Wow. You must have been pretty convinced.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you're going into a business, it's, you know, these are startups from their standpoint, but, you know, we have to manufacture or put the money out, and it's a real deal.
Do you remember the Decadent Delight lady, Stacy? Do you remember what's happened with her?
The one that we just listened to?
Yeah, the chocolate chip lady.
That one didn't air yet.
Oh, really?
No, that one didn't air. You got it ahead of time.
Oops, how did I do that?
I don't know. You got some connections.
I like that. That just kind of captured my attention. Well,
yeah.
Well, okay, then don't tell us. Don't tell us about that one, but tell us about some of the other ones that you did, did close the deal.
Yeah, well, you know, we closed the deal on Todd's Pies. He was the first guy. He was the happy baker, and he had these great sweet potato pies. And, you know, already the guy has been on QVC. He's, you know, out there selling his pies. He sold, I think, 4,000 pies or something like that in 8 minutes, and it wasn't a holiday show, obviously. So there's a bright future for him. I did a deal with a young lady called Treasure Chest Pets, and these are little pets that the kids, little storage units that look like pets, but the kids can put their play stuff around in the pet. And you know we're working a deal already with a big retailer. So I'm trying to think of some other ones. And you know we're working through the due diligence with a lot of the other brands that we've acquired.
Well, I have another clip, and this one is you. This is Damon John making a deal, and maybe after this this runs, you can tell me a little bit more about this and what's happened since the deal. And I'm assuming this one has aired.
Let's hope this one. Let's go. Yeah, I'm ready. Let's listen to it.
Let's give it a shot. Here we go.
Here is my proposal. I would want to go partners with you in the company, so it would be 50% for the $250,000. It would be contingent on us getting a deal with the Women's House, which are many of my friends. I know Barbara wants to be in. I find that there is no need for Barbara in this deal.
How nice.
But I do value the fact that I would have a partner with skin in the game that does know women's fashions. Eloquent female like Barbara can tell me it's crap or it's not.
Yes.
Barbara, are you in on this so I know what's going on?
Absolutely.
Okay, let's discuss this. I want to remain in creative control because I know and believe what the women want. And can we look at 45%?
Keep in mind that normally I ask for 51%. So the reason why I'm asking for 50% is so you have creative control. We make these decisions together. That is why I did not make it 51%.
We have a deal.
Good.
Oh my God, fantastic! One.
That was a pretty excited woman. Now, has that one aired?
Yes, that was the last one that aired, and that was Gayla Bentley.
Okay, I thought that one had been on. And what's happened with Gayla?
Gayla, you know, we have her set up, and she's now presenting to all those buyers that she can never get to. So she's now showing her line to, like, the biggest department stores, like, such as the JCPenney's, the Bloomingdale's, the Macy's, and, you know, we're going to roll it out. Now, it's all up to the store buyer who's going to buy the product, but then America has to like her brand. They have to like her stuff.
I thought it was interesting listening that your deal is contingent on her making a deal, basically.
Well, it's contingent on me making a deal for her. We go to the ladies' houses or like
Penny's,
and I would definitely be making the deal because she can't go make the deal. She wouldn't have needed me if that's the case.
Good point.
Right?
Good point. Yeah. Now, why would a person come on a show like this, an entrepreneur, come on a show like this? Is it the ultimate sign of desperation on their part or inventiveness? I mean, it's very opposite ends of the spectrum.
Oh, well, I think the aspects to come on the show are, first of all, the strategic relationship and or the financial relationship with one of the sharks. I think also it's a way to get your brand or product on a national stage right away. Mm-hmm. And I think also a lot of times it is out of desperation because, you know, you kind of, exhausted all your resources and this is the last step. And you know what, before you put the thing to bed, get on that national stage. If one of the sharks don't take it, maybe somebody will see you on TV and come back and rescue you. You know, I think that happened to Calix. There was a bra company that all the sharks turned down. But I heard after it aired, she got some great financing the next week.
Well, someone coming into this, they're looking for opportunity. Did the producers screen the entrepreneurs so that they were all people who had a real solid thing, or were there some ringers thrown in there just for, you know, entertainment purposes?
I don't think anybody were ringers. I think that they screened everybody to see that they had a solid thing, but you can only know so much in a screening, you know, about how much sales are. I mean, you can't do but so much due diligence. And are there ringers? I don't know. If somebody would have came on the show with a pet rock, you know, what is that an idea or not? You know, so how can you really put a price on an idea like that?
Were there any deals that your counterparts made that you thought it was ridiculous that they were so intrigued and wanted to put their money out on the line?
Sure. I mean, we all actually make fun of Barbara. I think that she's done a couple of deals that we thought were crazy. I've seen some that Robert has done. So, yeah, I have seen deals that I just didn't get it. And I said, what are you doing? And I could be wrong. I could be totally wrong.
And that's actually pretty common in business. That's why some people will make the deal and some people won't make the deal, right?
100%. I mean, you know, some people have just a whole different idea on why they can make it successful in a whole different angle, different road they're going to go down. And, and that is the big difference in business. It depends on what you see, what opportunity you see.
How much of it is the personality of the entrepreneur? I mean, to me, it's always seemed like the dating game. I mean, you go out with a lot of different people, and you'll have lunch or dinner, and you'll have drinks, and this one you'll click with, this one you won't. It may not even be the idea so much. Sometimes you buy into that person more than the idea.
I think you always buy into the person, period. I think the person is the brand, and I think that if you watch the history of the show, there have been some products that have had a great patent to it, and say there was a guy, he had some seat belts, and, you know, the guy – there was a cause that he was trying to, put these seatbelts in cars to save kids from killing themselves. We didn't want him in the deal. Reason being is we didn't like the entrepreneur in the deal because this guy wanted to put in maybe 100, maybe 1,000 seatbelts in cars in his shop in Las Vegas. But we felt if we get the patent, we give it to GM or Ford, we'll put it in millions of cars and save millions of lives. But we knew that he would cloudy the waters by being emotionally attached to it. So, there's deals where you like the entrepreneur, so you like the brand, and there's deals where you like the brand of the product, but you don't like the entrepreneur. And if that's the case, you don't want the entrepreneur anywhere near it.
Interesting. And what were some of the common mistakes of the entrepreneurs who tried to attract one of the panel as a partner?
The most common mistake of every entrepreneur there was that they overvalued their company, and I would have done it the same when I first started. I would have failed in front of the sharks because I was not business savvy. And what happens is people may spend $1 million on your brand. You may spend $1 million on your brand, and then you come and ask somebody to give you $1.5 million, but that's not my problem what you spent. My problem is what is the value of the brand or the idea now? So a lot of people don't understand that what you've done to get the brand to this point, unless it is viable in the market or the idea is really, really great, that doesn't matter. There is, there's valuations we have in business, 1, 2, 3, 5 times sales. Sometimes people come in with, and they ask for something 20 times sales. It's ridiculous.
And then there was a laugh. People could hear it in the clip. Stacy from Decadent Delights wanted $30,000 in exchange, I think, for 40% interest in a firm, and there was some chuckling going on. Is that because she asked so little?
I don't recall. Remember that one that one's coming up, and a lot of people don't realize that these negotiations are up to an hour and a half to 2 hours. You only see 4 or 5 minutes, so many things are being shot around that even when I see the show, I go, wow, I didn't know that. That person said that or this happened,
You mean you don't make a $150,000 decision in life in 5 minutes?
No, not at all, actually. It's definitely, those people under those hot lights for sometimes 2 hours.
Yeah. Oh, of course. I mean, yeah, it's like, I know we watch Top Chef, for example, a lot in our house, and it was interesting to hear that after they – they say, okay, you three are the top three for tonight, that it'll take 4 to 6 hours for the judges to make a decision. And meanwhile, these poor contestants, they're not, in front of the panel at the time. They're sitting in a warehouse waiting for hours and hours. But, it gives a certain honesty to the deliberations. You like to hear that.
Right.
I wouldn't want to hear that you made a $100,000 decision in 5 minutes, and I don't think I would want, for the entrepreneur's sake, to hear that it got, something got decided in TV time.
Yeah, no way. And then even after that, we go through a due diligence process with the entrepreneur because, some of these people may, you're going in with best efforts, but some of these people may not have paid taxes. They may not, they may have a, they may have a patent pending, not patent. That's night and day difference, So we have to go through our due diligence afterwards.
But, Damon, come on now. Some of our finest politicians today don't pay taxes.
Oh, that's true, but they get away with it. I know me. If I don't pay taxes, that's it,
Yeah. Hey, Let me change gears a little bit. If you would tell our listeners a little bit about how you got started in business.
Excuse me. Yeah, sure. I you know, around 1990, early 90s, I started creating a clothing line, and I started putting on a lot of artists, music artists around the country, and the clothing line was called FUBU. And I know I heard you chuckle about FUBAR. I definitely know what FUBAR is. And FUBU stood for For Us, By Us, and the reason why I created this name, excuse me, I'm sorry.
All right.
The reason why I created this name was because at that time Timberland had made a statement that we don't make our clothes for drug dealers, and I know that, you know, I wasn't a drug dealer, and I bought a lot of their product, and this new music was emerging, which we call now hip-hop, and I thought the For Us, By Us was this whole community of hip-hop, because the music is not really something you do, with something you live, and there was a way of talking, and there was a way of walking, you know, and it was just a lifestyle. So I created this, and I just started putting it on videos, and I would have maybe 10 shirts for about 3 years. From 1992 to 1994, I had about 10 t-shirts, and I'd put it on a video, and I would take it back, and I'd put it on a video and take it back and dry clean it, and I only had these 10 shirts. But after about 2 years, I was this huge brand as far as everybody was concerned, because I was on every single music artist. And and I really was just working at Red Lobster with 10 shirts. So people just started really to recognize the FUBU name, and then, you know, we started to go to the trade shows and push the product out. And before you know it, you know, I ended up doing a deal with Samsung America to distribute my product, and that's it. I started taking this guerrilla marketing approach and doing it all around the world, and FUBU became a global brand.
Did people ask you about FUBU when you started, or did a lot of people just act like they understood so they wouldn't seem uncool?
No, people, well, FUBU had, it's a good and bad. I mean, FUBU had this this name For Us, By Us, and nobody knew what the us was. You know, a lot of people started saying, well, it's just African American. It's for African American buyers. So they took it and put it on their shoulders and ran with it. Then people would say, oh, it's for hip hop. Then people say, oh, it's for rappers. So it became a controversial thing. And then, you know, they say, you know, all, you know, it's good advertising no matter what, good or bad. So it just became a snowball of what FUBU was.
You published a book, which I mentioned in the introduction, Display of Power, How FUBU Changed the World of Fashion, Branding, and Lifestyle. About 2 years ago, I guess that came out. Now, some executives, and I know this because I make my living working with executives and CEOs writing their books, some of them feel a little funny opening their private business to the world. What made you decide to tell your story?
Well, I decided to tell the story because it was a motivational aspect for other people. I have been on speaking circuits, but I have limited time that I can go out there and touch people, and it was my way of giving back. So what I decided to do was put together a book that had most of the commonly asked questions that whether CEOs when I'm speaking to them or kids in church and entrepreneurs ask me. But when I went with my writer, he said, Damon, they need to know about you first, because they don't know where your point of view is coming from, but if they feel they know about you, and they'll understand your point of view. So the first half of the book is an education on myself, where I came from, how I came up in this new world of hip-hop, Generation Y, whatever you want to call it. And then I moved into explaining, you know, the pitfalls and the highs and the lows of business, and how FUBU really affected the marketing mindset of this generation. You know, these are just basically commonly asked questions that a lot of entrepreneurs have always asked me. So I just wanted to put that there because I wasn't able to get out anymore and speak to as many people as I'd like to.
And after the book came out, did you at all feel like you had overshared anything? Anything you wish you hadn't shared?
No, not really. I mean, I have 10 books inside of me, and I think that there's a lot of secrets or things that I wouldn't never tell people that you know, I kept to myself. I'm very proud of the book and what we put in there, and as well as I'm on my second one now. But the second one is not really about me. It's about as we spoke earlier, being a brand from yourself. You know, you reflect from being a brand yourself out into being a brand, whether it's for a corporation or your own business, but we buy into you as the brand first. So I'm very happy with the angle and how much information I put in the book.
Two more questions. I'll let you go. This one's about FUBU, and the last one will be about Shark Tank. But as you look back on FUBU, what was the smartest thing you did running your company, and what was the dumbest thing you did?
I think the smartest thing I've done with FUBU is create a smart business structure with myself and all my partners, whether it be my four FUBU guy partners or whether it be my distributor. A strong base. It's built on a strong base. I think the dumbest thing we did at FUBU was to over-distribute when the product really, really started doing well. We over-distributed. We didn't know any better. And, you know, it obviously took away some of the cachet from the product in the United States. And then we decided to pull it out of the United States and just concentrate overseas because we over-distributed initially. But even with that over-distribution, we still had a great 10 years of sharp product out here with a high cachet. And now even with pulling it out of the market, people are starting to request it since it really hasn't existed in the market in the last 6-7 years.
Got it. All right. And finally, okay, so Tuesday, October 20th, 8 p.m. is the finale of Shark Tank. Would you like to see it continue, and would you like to continue on it?
Yeah, I love the show. The finale is going to be great. I would love to see it continue because I have a lot of fun on the show. And, you know, I get on Twitter or on my DamonJohn.com, and I speak to people, and I love the education that it's giving people as well. I wouldn't, you know, 5 years ago, you would never see a room of millionaires and billionaires talking to everyday people and knowing what people want in business. It's a great educational show, as well as I learn a lot from the other sharks on the panel. You know, they're so diverse, so I'm really excited about the show, and I would hope that it comes back next year.
Great. All right. Well, folks, listen, you can watch the season finale of Shark Tank, starring Damon John, of course, and a few other people, on Tuesday, October 20th at 8 p.m., on ABC, and you can still pick up his book, Display of Power, in great bookstores everywhere. You can order it online at MrMedia.com. And you mentioned a website, DamonJohn.com. And are you on Twitter?
Yes, it's either DamonJohn.com or, yes, I am on Twitter. I am at TheSharkDamon, but Damon is spelled like Raymond with a D.
Like Raymond with a D. Okay, everybody got that now? Okay. Damon, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun having you on the show. I appreciate your time, and thanks so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
Great, Mr. Media. Thank you. I had a great time.
All right. You take care.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. And, folks, for more great business-related interviews, you can surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. That's where you can listen to my earlier conversations with Isidore Sharp of Four Seasons Hotels, Guy Kawasaki of Apple Computer and Alltop, Dave Hagen of Boingo Wireless, Barry Liebert of Mzinga, Ed Droste, founder of Hooters, Laurel Tooby, Media Bistro, Alan Levy, Blog Talk Radio, and Sam Haskell of the William Morris Agency and now the Miss America pageant. And please think about writing an online review of Mr. Media, casting a vote for Mr. Media, or marking Mr. Media as one of your favorites, whether you listen on Blog Talk Radio, blogcritics.org, TrueSlant, Pointer Online, Digital Journal, Vox, Mediafly, Podfeed.net, Blueberry, Zencast, Zimbio, Current, or Odeo. Subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. Or subscribe to Mr. Media's blog on the Amazon Kindle Reader. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. It's A-N-D-E-L-M-A-N. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/Andelman or www.facebook.com/Andelman. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate when you give up a piece of your day and spend it with Mr. Media. Thanks for listening, everybody.